The U.S. go up. What a goal from Carlos Bocanegra.
Boyd will try a long hit. What a goal from Boyd. This is spectacular. It's hit with no regard for humanity. Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes, it is. Switzerland. And Shaqiri has scored in the 90th minute. That was worth the price of admission alone.
This is Soccer Matters
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm, is on the air. We are ready to get after it here tonight. We've got Brian McDonald and myself, we have put together a great show for you here tonight, and we've got a bevy of incredible interviews to bring to you tonight. Former U.S. men's national team, yeah, you know him as Tab Ramos. Tab will join me tonight. Of course, Tab and I will discuss the under-20 men's national team. We'll also dig into the full national team under Mauricio Pochettino. We'll get his thoughts on things around that. El Clasico is over. It is a world happening whenever it happens. And for the first time in four matches, Real Madrid are winners 2-1. What is the reaction in Spain? Where is Lamine Yamal? Is he becoming a problem for Hansi Flick, the Barcelona manager? Where is Lamal with his groin injury? We talk to the one and only in Barcelona, Jordi Sunyer of TV3 in Spain, who will give you the lowdown on this. You're not going to want to miss that interview. And then you've seen that Hugo Perez and Mauricio Cienfuegos, two players, Hugo Perez with the U.S. men's national team, Cienfuegos with El Salvador, but two guys that have been involved in El Salvador's football. Well, they are now going to be brought back to be a part of trying to turn things around in that country after their elimination from the World Cup. Hugo Perez is going to be based in the United States, and he's going to be looking for players that are dual citizens with El Salvador and obviously the United States. So the former U.S. international player is going to join me tonight here. He's also the former coach of El Salvador, of La Selecta. He's going to be looking for players around the U.S. There's going to be an event here in Houston as well. And we all know how deep and passionate the El Salvadorian soccer community is in Houston, Texas. Hugo's going to join me tonight with more on that. And a big thanks to the Dynamo Faithful guys last night. I was on their podcast, had a great time. It was a lot of fun. They're very interesting guys. They're funny guys. I enjoyed it immensely. So thank you, Dynamo Faithful, for having me on. Breaking news tonight here, and this is a big one in the world of women's college soccer. G. Guerreri has stepped down today. 30 years as the head coach. Lots of NCAA tournament runs, got to the College Cup down in Florida one year. I was calling that, I remember. 20 conference championships. G. Guerreri is stepping down. He has hit the 500 win mark in 2022. 18 conference championships with Texas A&M, has been around it a long time. By the way, has spent a lot of time, obviously, in our Houston market. So in a way, he's a bit of a Houstonian. So there you go. G. Guerreri is out. Now, this is going to be what I believe, well, this is no doubt one of the most coveted college coaching jobs in the women's side. And I believe people are pining to get in line to get an interview for this. So it's pretty incredible. It's a little bit sad for me, but I do know G is going to remain involved in the game. I've spoken to him. I've congratulated him on an amazing career. And then we will bring him on next week. Okay, no question about that. It's going to be a lot of fun. And looking forward to bringing him on, doing a retrospective on his career and what the next step is for G. Guerreri. So that's some big news here tonight. Also, a former professional soccer player, and I don't know if a lot of people know this man, but his name is Bob Rohrbach, and Bob Rohrbach has lived here in Houston, Texas. He was on the New York Cosmos, Detroit Express, I think the Colorado Caribou back in the day. We're talking about the NASL. But Bob Rohrbach has lived here in Houston with his family, and I was alerted today that he passed away. So here's another part of our Houston soccer community, Bob Rohrbach, who sadly has passed away. So we send the condolences out to his family. Another guy who made an excellent career out of it during the time, you know, he was on the Cosmos with Pelé, and he was Houston-based. So there's that. And again, condolences out to his family, but I thought it's very important that we mention people like him. So we got a good show in store here tonight. Really looking forward to getting after it with you. Both the Dynamo and the Dash failed to make the playoffs here locally. Future is a bit uncertain, I would think. Relevancy, potential sale of the Dash, Dynamo needing a reboot. There's a lot going on there, and this is all in a World Cup year. So we'll see what's going to happen with the club. Attention is quickly switching to other things, and that is World Cup 2026. So we're pretty excited about what's right around the corner for us. 7 games, 5 group stage games, 2 knockout stage games over at Energy Stadium with the folks at Lone Star Sports and Entertainment. So that is a big one. Lamine Yamal of Barcelona. This is a huge problem right now for Barcelona and Hansi Flick. We're going to get into that more with Jordi Sunyer tonight. But he turned 18. Things began to unravel a little bit discipline-wise. He's got a goofball of a father. I don't think there's any question. He was yelling out at the Ballon d'Or celebration. It does bring you, and it does remind you of, you know, all of a sudden, rags to riches, right? You've got ridiculous resources now. He is an 18-year-old kid. So I would just say I go right to the adult element around him. Jorge Mendes is his agent. What's he doing? Or what is he doing? Hansi Flick, can he be authoritarian? He's a German. Can he, you know, put the grips on Lamine Yamal? Do they have to handle him with kid gloves? I don't know. Agent, father, Hansi Flick, club. And then, you know, you got ex-players, and I don't like this at all, but I've lost respect for Gerard Piqué, to be honest with you. This is a guy that has professed his love for Barcelona. You know, he once was talking about wanting to become the club president. And then here you got another genius player in Lamine Yamal at Barcelona coming after Messi, right? Hard to believe it could happen, but it has. And Piqué has been kind of using him as, you know, he's brought him out to this thing called the Kings League or something that he does, which is, you know, this league that has ex-players in it and all these weird rules where, like, whoever's the owner of one of the teams, they can push a button and then somebody can come down and take a penalty kick. So Piqué's had him out there, you know, which Piqué knows damn well that, you know, he's taking his attention away from what his real profession is, and that is playing for Barcelona. And he's bringing him to these Kings League events. And Yamal came out of the crowd and took a penalty kick. And I just think that's kind of loose. And, of course, Piqué is just trying to promote his league by grabbing somebody that's got half the world following him, right? And that's kind of the way it works. Like, people are bringing people on that are influencers for a reason. They may not know a whole lot about soccer. They may not even be good at talking about soccer. But if they got a million followers or half a million followers, they bring them on. And they're hoping to get new exposure to other people. And what about Hansi Flick? I mean, in the press conference, he said he was asked about Lamine Yamal's off-field choices, which apparently he's been missing out on, you know, going to club endorsed appearances, but he's doing his own appearances. Hansi Flick didn't say much. He just said, quote, none of my business. That's kind of wrong. It is kind of your business because you got to keep somehow take care of this. So I don't know what's going to happen. It's, and you're going to hear Jordi Sunyer talk about it from TV3, and he's got a lot more of the insight. ESPN 975 is where you get the podcast, Spotify, and Google. or the other places you can get it. Do want to remind you about YouTube TV customers. You could lose ESPN and the sports you love, including college football, college game day, Monday night football, the NBA, college basketball, and more. If you want to take action, you go to keepmynetworks.com to keep ESPN. Big thank you to everybody who supports this program. We move on. Lionel Messi, well, he has spoken about his aim to play in 2026 for Argentina in the World Cup, despite concerns about his age, fitness. He's been looking pretty good lately. He's got 4 goals in 2 games. Nashville certainly doesn't want to see him anymore. Is he going to win the coveted MLS Cup this year with Inter Miami? We'll find out. He has signed another 3-year deal with Major League Soccer. So what does that mean? I do believe he can, you know, obviously he can get out of that contract when he wants. But with the new stadium being built right next to the airport in Miami, you still want Messi involved as long as you possibly can have him, because people are going to want to see him in the house that Messi built, or maybe Beckham built, or Jorge Mas built. So I think engaging him, sending a clear message that he's signing for another 3 years, is good for the ticket-buying public when it comes to the star quality that only he can bring at this point. So that's one to keep an eye on. Inter Milan. Their goalkeeper, Josip Martinez, was involved in a tragic car accident. A guy dies in Como, Italy. We forget that professional soccer players are involved in incidents and live lives like everybody else. So there's a man right there, a goalkeeper who's got a lot on his mind. I can assure you that. Coaching changes. Brendan Rodgers resigned at Celtic after a poor start to the Scottish Premier League season. I was watching a little bit of their game this weekend. Juventus has fired Igor Tudor. 8-match winless streak for them and Weston McKinney. And what's sad about that is the fact that Juventus is going through coaches like there's no tomorrow. Like I go through slip sliders. That's what they're going through. Coaches, they're going through coaches. I'm going through slip sliders down on Bins. So I'm knocking off the signature slip or the Caribbean chick, the shrimp shack, chicken tenders. I'm going through them all. Maybe the Captain Jack, the blackened salmon, which we had up here. You liked them, right, Brian?
Yeah, I think the shrimp stack was my favorite. Their classic burger was pretty good, too.
Oh, I love the classic burger. And then they
also had a chicken one with pineapple that was pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's Caribbean chicken.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, it's slip sliders. It's down on Bins if you're in Herman Park or if you're in the museum area and you want some mouth-watering, made-to-order sliders, backyard burgers, Southern Comfort, all kinds. You get down there to slip sliders. And before I go to break again, I just want to remind you of this. If you are a YouTube TV customer, you could lose ESPN and the sports you love, including college football, college game day, Monday night football, NBA, college basketball, and more. Take action. Go to keepmynetworks.com to keep ESPN. Take a break here at Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. Brought to you by the legendary Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. If you need a personal injury attorney, there is none better than the Daspit Law Firm.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
Listening to Soccer Matters
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Well, how about that? The one and only Rob Halford and Judas Priest. You might have been at that concert up in the Woodlands this weekend. I was. Alice Cooper as well. Corrosion of Conformity. This is Heading Out to the Highway. They didn't play this, which disappointed me, but they were excellent. And Alice Cooper was excellent. These are two legends of rock. Just a spectacular night of music out there. And whenever I think of music, I think of one place, Cactus Music, which is a place that nobody ever wants to not go to. You got to get in there. If you like vinyl, you like CDs, it's Cactus Music. Go in there and talk to Quinn. All right, one more hit on this. YouTube TV customers, you could lose ESPN and the sports you love, including college football, college game day, Monday night football, NBA, college basketball, and more. You got to take action. Go to keepmynetworks.com to keep ESPN. God, I love this song. You like the song, Brian?
Yeah, I'm a fan of Judas Priest.
Yeah? What else? What other tunes do you like of theirs?
Breaking the Law.
Breaking the Law. Everybody loves that.
Yeah, yeah.
Beavis and Butthead Lady like that song, too. All right. I don't know why I said that. That's right. You know, that you should kick me out of this studio right now. I should go home and go to bed. It's over.
I think you can make another 10 minutes.
After I made a Beavis Butthead reference. All right. Welcome back, everybody. So a couple of things here. Let's talk a little bit about El Clasico, and let's get into that. And let's start it off with the opening goal in this one from Kylian Mbappe.
Mbappe's in behind here. And yes, he makes it count again. Unstoppable. Kylian Mbappe, give him a chance. He's going to take it.
He's on fire. I mean, to have guys like him and Vinicius Jr. Up front. Actually, one of my friends calls Vinicius Jr. Fictitious Jr. Because of the diving. But okay, that's a good one. So Kylian Mbappe is on fire right now. When you have those two guys up front that can make plays like that, it's crazy. Fermín López ties it up for Barcelona.
Young Turkish player is playing a big role this season. Lost out there, though. This could be a problem. Cut back, and there's the equaliser. Fermín López strikes again after his hat-trick in midweek.
So it's at that point 1-1. Game winner comes from Jude Bellingham, the 22-year-old in 119 days.
Vinicius gets the byline. Can't quite catch it back. Still in play, mind. Jude! Nelson's there now! It's turned in!
Jude Bellingham
on the back post!
Good catch there from Steve McManaman. And 2-1. And that's what a team does when they're calling a game. El Clasico ends 2-1, Real Madrid. Bellingham and Mbappe star. Before this, it was four straight Clasicos that went to Barcelona. Breaks the streak. Kylian Mbappe now has seven straight league goals. And he's the third player in history to score in four straight Clasicos. Kylian Mbappe. So he's on fire. Real Madrid outshoots Barcelona 23-15. Shots on target 10-6 in favor of Real Madrid. Okay, so now I want you to listen to what I just said. 23-15 in shots, 10-6 on target. So the shot category falls heavily to Real Madrid, yet they only had 32% possession. So it's sometimes about efficiency, and I think anybody would have bet the house and the couple of horses you owned on Barcelona outpossessing Real Madrid. But Real Madrid wins the game. They were the better team. I thought they played very well in the first 45 minutes. I don't think it was one of the Clasicos that'll go down in history. Apparently, Lamine Yamal was playing with a groin injury, yet plays a ball at the end of the game, I think, to Koundé. And for some reason, Koundé decides to chest it down. He had made a diagonal run in the box. They had beaten the last line of defense of Real Madrid. And it's like, throw your head at it. This could have been a draw. Just throw your head at it. Tries to bring it down and loses control, and that's it. And that ball came from Lamine Yamal, who was held in check, but also, again, had a groin injury. And you're going to hear more from Jordi Sunyer on that tonight. Real Madrid's coach Xabi Alonso says, quote, we're still under construction, but it is a team that is still in the building phases. But we had two problem childs in this game. One was Lamine Yamal, who
I mean, the adults in the room got to get around this guy because he was feeding the press and feeding everybody very motivating thoughts for an opponent, especially Real Madrid. Barcelona's defensively conceding a lot of chances. They're trying to play this high-risk-reward game. It's not working right now. There's a lot of people injured. There is a trade-off to the way they play. Now it's looking a little bit reckless. So it's a little bit different. Vinny Jr. was the other culprit. He got taken off. So here's a guy that gets taken off. You're winning the game. And I understand emotion, and it's fair. But, man, you know, he throws his arms up in the air. He's making it all about him. And sometimes we as individuals forget that our actions can hurt the team. And sometimes that kind of craziness can be a deterrent. It can draw attention elsewhere, and it can change a game. A guy getting taken off. And I know there's some people out there going, what are you talking about? No, absolutely can. Here's a guy that's struggling to adapt maybe at Real Madrid, Trent Alexander-Arnold, for all you Liverpool fans. So that's it. Pedri was sent off with two yellow cards, and that's the way that ended. Okay, now, Manchester United. Everybody says they're back. Let's go to one of their goal calls here, as United now has taken 9 points in three games.
Lovely cut and thrust about this football match. Šeško turning. Lobbed up towards Ahmad. Recycled by Bruno Fernandes for Casemiro. Sipped onto Cunha. That's a super goal. That is a beautiful, beautiful Manchester United goal. And it's first in these famous colours for Matias Cunha.
Well, is this the platform that win over Liverpool? This could be that launching pad for Manchester United now. And believe me, it's like most of you out there know, the Premier League looks to be kind of up for grabs. I know what you're thinking. Wait a second, Glenn. What about Arsenal? This is Arsenal's time because there's nobody unbeatable in this league. This is Arsenal's time to win the Premier League under Arteta. And that's going to bring pressure to them. So the Manchester United goal there, that was something special. That was five-star entertainment. Your eyes would have popped out of your head if you saw that. And if you haven't seen the highlights, go check out that goal. It's a fantastic goal. So what pops up on my phone but a guy, and I think he may be in Africa. I don't know where he is. He's in a foreign country. He's wearing a suit that is all made up of the logos of Manchester United, right? The badge. And he's a very funny guy, and he's walking through the neighborhood, and he's shouting, Manchester United is back. Now, listen to what his neighbor says.
Ladies and gentlemen, let the world know we are back.
You are not back.
Please, I say we are back.
You are not back.
Okay, we shall see.
You can hear. Now, the other guy is not even in the camera. He's in his backyard somewhere. You don't even see him, and he's just yelling out, you're not back. You're not back. But something tells me that's maybe Nigeria based on that accent. But, oh, man, I love the comedy that the sport of soccer and football can bring us. All right, speaking of a guy that loves the game and is a fun player to be around, who has lifted what was already a good team, and is doing it both on and off the field. And I say off the field. All right, here's Thomas Muller. Let's take the clip from him, number six.
Thomas, a dominant performance from the opening whistle. How important was it for you guys to come out and set the tone this way in the playoffs?
Yeah. If you have now the result, it's 3-0. We controlled the game from the beginning. That was our plan, to get the control, to have this fine balance between attacking, being ready for the second phase balls, being ready also for their counterattacks. They have good strength, especially with their deep runs. But we control them well. We share the ball well. We have an amazing crowd here in BC Place. And I think was a strong performance, but you know as it is in sports. Was just part one. We have now one win in the books. We need a second one.
Long journey ahead. I spoke to Jesper Sorensen throughout the week, and he said, I'm boring as a manager. I only think 1 or 2, 3 days at most. From the player's perspective, what about this team do you think that has what it takes to go all the way?
Jesper is not boring. He's quite a funny guy, to be honest. And what was the question?
What about this team do you believe amongst the players that believe you can go much further in the tournament?
Yeah, we can talk about November, December. We can talk about our vacation in January. We can talk about so many things. But in the end, we have to get our wheels off, go to the garage, make us ready for next Saturday, and then we go on.
We need a guy like that in Houston so bad. So bad. All right, I got 2 minutes to get off now. I didn't even get to the Tom Brady clip. Can we save that one? That one's one that could be played on any show, but it's a good one. All right, this is It's All Over Now by the Rolling Stones. Johnny Winter used to cover this as well, as many people have. Got a lot of good music here tonight. Okay, so a couple of things. We're going to come back with Jordy Sunyer. I'm going to remind you about John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's daspitlaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW, 713-CALL-NOW. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they get soccer on the airwaves. And a big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm for getting us on the air for so many years here at ESPN. And, you know, I've been on the radio 22 years. That's a long time for a soccer show in the United States. I'm sure there's another one or two or three out there, but I got to think we're in the top five of longevity, and I'm very proud of that, and that's because of you and the station and everybody who's worked on this show, past and present. So a big thank you to that. I also want to, again, remind you about Senate Avenue Brewing. We're going to have another live show out there coming up in the month of November, so we'll be back out there. Senate Avenue Brewing, the best in craft beer. That's our great friend out there, Andrew Mitchum, their award-winning beer. He had a dark beer that he was showing off today, and I can't remember the name, but, man, did that look good. It was like, yeah, I'd like one of those right now. And he's very proud of that one. But they've got all different types of beer. It's all craft. It's all done in-house. The vats are there. You can look at the bags of the materials they use. It's really cool. They got an outdoor patio at Senate Avenue Brewing in Jersey Village. Get out there. It's 16,000 Dillard. And we'll take a break. As we go to break, remember this. Paris Saint-Germain announced a new club revenue record of 837 million euros. Daspit Law presents Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. We're coming back next with more Barcelona talk, more El Clasico talk with Jordy Sunyer of TV3.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
This speech is my recital. I think it's very vital to rock
around.
That's right.
On top.
It's tricky. Here we go. It's tricky to rock around. To rock around. That's right. On time. It's tricky.
You're listening to Soccer Matters
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. The slider revolution is on. Slip sliders down on bins in the Museum District. All right, so the El Clasico this weekend, there was a big event here in Houston. A ton of people turned out to it at a place called Stampede. Walmart was involved with this. Also, they brought in Rivaldo, the former Barcelona player, and Iker Casillas. All right. No better person to talk to than the one and only Jordy Sunyer from TV3 in Barcelona. And Jordy joins us now.
Good afternoon, Glenn. Thanks for having me on your show again. It's a pleasure, as usual.
We always love having you on. All right. Let's start off with the mood in Barcelona after the 2-1 loss to Real Madrid in El Clasico.
Well, it's strange because, of course, it's a loss, and losing to Real Madrid, it's not good news for Barcelona. But if you watch the game, you saw it was not a good game. I mean, Barcelona lost, but Real Madrid didn't play that well. It was they were a better team, that's for sure. They could have scored more goals and let it be a 3-1 or 4-1 defeat, but The feeling here is trying not to make it that big. Okay, it's a loss, but fandom here and analysts here say that in the return leg in Barcelona in spring, Barcelona perfectly able to defeat Real Madrid. This is not a 100% built team, Xabi Alonso's team. They have many things to improve as well. Barcelona were without a lot of key players, no Rafinha, no Lewandowski, no Gavi, etc. So, yeah, it's always for Barcelona fans, it's always sad to lose against Real Madrid, but it was not a big deal, I think. So, the league is long. We are in late October, many matches to be played. Nothing very, very important.
Going into that game, Barcelona had won four straight Clásicos. Kylian Mbappe has now scored seven straight league goals, and he's the third player in history to score four in four straight Clásicos. Let's just look overall. Let's start with Real Madrid and what's going there under Xabi Alonso. Yeah, I mean, he was quoted as saying, look, we're still under construction. This is some of the best form I've seen Kylian Mbappe in La Liga play since he arrived.
Yeah, you see Real Madrid playing, and it's not that different from Carlo Ancelotti's team. So we've said that many times on your show. Real Madrid have not a style, a characteristic, or a different style. So they rely many times on the quality of their best players. And of course, in Kylian Mbappe, there you have one of the best players in the planet. And he's now in tremendous shape, as you said. So he's able to create mayhem against any team, any big team, for example, Barcelona. Xabi Alonso, he changed a little bit his system. He tried to harden his midfield with Camavinga, with physical players, and he tried to leave Jude Bellingham, for example, roaming more freely in this three quarters of the field zone, in this attacking midfield position, more or less. So it was a slight change from previous games. So you don't change the system if you have a team that plays from the heart, that knows everything that they have to do from the beginning. So he still is trying to find new ideas, new ways of playing. But of course, you have Thibaut Courtois, one of the best goalkeepers in world football. There you have Kylian Mbappe. There you have Jude Bellingham. You can't rely on them. And that's the thing about Real Madrid. They are not the best team to watch. They struggled against Juventus in the UEFA Champions League game previous to El Clasico. And you've seen Juventus are not in a good shape in Serie A. They have sacked their manager, Croatian Igor Tudor. So it was not an easy victory. So that's why I was saying as well that in Barcelona, it's a sad defeat, but not that sad, because we see it's the Real Madrid of recent years. It can go well, but it could not go well for them if their key players are not in good shape. Now they are, but we have to see in the future.
He's Jordi Sunyer, TV3, Xabi Alonso taking over at Real Madrid. There's some interesting data on them, that 28% of their, you know, pressing in a high area, 28% of those turnovers end up in shots. And, you know, to your point, when you have individuals like Kylian Mbappe and Vinicius Jr. around a goal and you turn a team over, I mean, individuals can then do the damage.
But you've said a very interesting thing regarding Real Madrid and regarding Barcelona, but regarding all Barcelona opponents this season, because they are beginning to see that, well, we have to consider that Barcelona players had admitted, for example, Pedri, for example, Pau Cubarsí in recent press interviews, that Pedri said that very clearly. We are not running like last year. We are not pressing like last year. So if you press Barcelona high like Real Madrid did, this Barcelona is more vulnerable than last season's Barcelona. So Real Madrid knew that. And yeah, they went to press high and they created lots of press. It was very difficult for Barcelona to build play because they weren't comfortable with all that. It's true that Real Madrid combined this football idea, which is legitimate and credit to them, with some typical, we could say, Mourinho-era tactics. Because as you perfectly know, Xabi Alonso is one of the best disciples of Jose Mourinho. And ironically, in this Clásico, of more than 100 minutes played, ball was effectively in play in just 56 minutes, which is very, very rare for El Clásico. So it's like a strange blend. So footballistically, you do what you have to do, but there was this gamesmanship as well that helped Real Madrid. But let's focus on this thing you said. Barcelona are beginning to see that opponents are knowing their tricks, their assets, what they did last year in order to be the successful team they were. And Barcelona, Hansi Flick, are not finding solutions for that. And this is the key challenge for them, I think, and for the rest of the season, because they are not finding these solutions to face high pressing like Real Madrid's the other day and all the challenges they are facing in other games.
Are they conceding more bigger chances in games than in the past, you think? And I know it's a high-risk reward style of play with the high line and everything, and I also understand we factor in the injuries and people that are missing, but I think one of the appeals of Barcelona is that it's attacking football. They're going forward. They can see, we can see three, we'll score four. I think that's amazing from the entertainment value, but the risk reward right now, I don't know, maybe the margins are changing.
They are conceding more. And one of the things why they are conceding more is that this high line, if you remember last year, Barcelona opponents had dozens of goals disallowed for offside because timing was perfect and they executed the offside trap tremendously. It was a great thing.
Yeah, remember everybody was critical. They were critical of Hansi Flick saying this is tantamount to suicide what you're doing here, and it ends up working very efficiently.
Yeah, it worked. It worked, but this year it is not working that well. It is still working because in El Clásico last Sunday, Real Madrid had several goals disallowed for offside. But it's not working because, first, Barcelona have lost Íñigo Martínez. And he's a player that Barcelona are missing because he was a true leader, being 34. Of course, he was a veteran, but being 34, he was helping young defenders like Pau Cubarsí. When you have a 34-year-old international defender, it always helps. So this year they have a younger defense. Cubarsí is not in his best shape. He's not the Cubarsí of last season. Koundé is not in his best shape. So
Balde?
Yeah, Balde has been injured. Sometimes the defensive central pair has been Cubarsí and Eric Garcia. Sometimes it has been Araujo and Cubarsí. And Flick has changed Cubarsí from right central defender to left central defender. And there is a slight difference. He doesn't feel totally comfortable playing in the left profile of central defense. So you see there are more doubts than last season in Barcelona's defense. And you can't see it in games. They are conceding more, and they have to improve. They have to work on that. They have time, but they have to improve on that because it's not like last season. Hansi Flick last season talked about and sorry for swearing. He talked about the shit November because in November Barcelona had a drop in shape, but. Journalists here were joking. What is he going to say this year? Will he talk about the shit October or shit September? Because they've not been playing well in the whole start of the season. And we are in late October and we are not still seeing the Barcelona of last season.
Remember? So I want to just stop you there. No. This is exceptional. So I want to ask you to just tell my listeners about the pressure that the press is putting on Hansi Flick now and at what level it is.
Well, I wouldn't say there is a high level of pressure from press to Hansi Flick. Once you've won everything that Hansi Flick had won last year, press in Barcelona always allows you a little bit of space. So it's not that the pressure is that big, but Barcelona is a totally different club. You know that, and your listeners that are Barcelona fans, the Houston Culés and so on, will know that. It's a very special club, and it's all about politics. So the first year is always different because everything is new. You arrive there with new ideas. They let you work more or less. You come, in the case of Hansi Flick, you come in a situation in which Barcelona needed to win. So, yeah, Hansi Flick had room to test things or to shape the team like he wanted to shape it. But the second year is more difficult because everything in Barcelona is politics. And when I say politics, I don't mean traditional politics. I mean, there are, you know, there is not a single rule like in Real Madrid. We always talk of Real Madrid. We always say that they are a presidential club. I mean, there are few people taking decisions. Florentino Perez, the chairman, there is a CEO. They don't have a football director at Real Madrid. They may have one, but it's just everybody knows it's the chairman and his CEO. This is not happening at Barcelona. There is many people that may have their say on the day-to-day
and have influence.
The club. Yeah, and they have influence. What happened, for example, with Lamine Yamal some weeks ago? It became known, although Hansi Flick said it was not true, but it became known that one of the most important points of Hansi Flick's way of working is discipline. So if you are a minute late to the pep talk before the game, you won't play. You may be in his first idea of a starting 11. If you arrive 30 seconds late to the pep talk before the game, you're not going to play. Another fellow will play in your place.
Mm-hmm.
This has happened with Jules Koundé, with Rafinha. This has happened with many players. It didn't happen with Lamine Yamal. According to some information, Lamine Yamal has been late for several team talks and several appointments this season. And he's not been punished by Hansi Flick. He's playing against Real Madrid. Yeah, it's great that.
A different precedent is set for Lamine Yamal. I mean, this is the challenge that Hansi Flick has. It doesn't look to me like he's all there on the field right now. And you called this a long time ago that there was a real concern about managing his focus, and it seems to be kind of fraying a little bit.
Yeah, this is how you lose a dressing room. This is how you lose a dressing room, because the rest of players feel that your authority is undermined. It's not that you have no authority, but your authority was rock solid last year, and it seems it's not anymore, because Lamine Yamal does whatever he wants. He is late in this.
So how long does the disrespect get accepted by Hansi Flick in Barcelona? I mean, he's such a rare talent there. This is a really, really tricky situation, and this could be a real deterrent over the course of a long season.
Well, I think I told you in a previous interview that the club feel that they cannot control Lamine Yamal anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they admit they cannot control him. Lamine Yamal has been missing even some media appointments ordered from the club. I mean,
But then he takes some of his own media appointments, right? That he wants
does,
to take.
He does whatever he wants. The most important thing about Lamine Yamal this week is that, and Hansi Flick's assistant, Marc Huzoor, who was the coach for Barcelona in El Clásico because Hansi Flick was suspended, admitted that Lamine Yamal has played El Clásico with an injury. He's got this pubalgia, this groin pain, which is a very dangerous injury because you know that you've been a pro, you know that pubalgia may be a chronic injury. That's a dangerous one. He played he was not 100%. He was not even probably 70-80%. Vinicius was mocking Lamine Yamal on the pitch after everything Lamine Yamal had said during the week. And there are some TV pictures showing Vinicius saying to Lamine Yamal, hey, it's all backward passes. Everything you're doing, it's backward passes because you cannot dribble. You're not okay. But you're still playing. So if you're not okay, let your place to another one. Even if it's a youngster, even if it's a player that normally doesn't play as a winger.
So Vinny Jr. was trying to get in the kid's head, right?
Yeah, but it's Lamine's fault because he's involved in this awkward competition called Kings League, which was created by Gerard Piqué.
Yeah, I see him showing up at that all the time.
Yeah, but it's
isn't that disrespectful though to Barcelona that you're messing around with this sideshow?
I think so because you're a Barcelona player in all circumstances, and well, you may want to involve with that. Because you're friends with Gerard Piqué, because you know that this competition, if you want to call it like this, reaches younger audiences, and you want to be you want to appeal to younger. Okay, it's all right, but you have always to do that with permission from the club. If you don't have permission from the club, you can't be Lamine Yamal, you can't be Lionel Messi, you can be whenever you want. You cannot do that. I think it's the ABC of discipline. It's my opinion. Probably other fans will not think that way.
Well,
but
yeah. Younger fans probably would not agree with you, but that's the way it goes.
If you watch the pictures, this competition is very awkward. It's an indoor football competition, but for example, one of the rules is that the managers of the teams playing, they push a button, and pushing this button, they call the chairman of their team to take a penalty. So Lamine Yamal took a penalty. They were playing a match, and the manager presses the button. Of course, everything is staged, more or less. And yeah, he goes down from his cabin where he was watching the game, and he takes a penalty. Of course, it's not a... It's like wrestling, you know, it's a mock penalty, but it's still a penalty. So his team win the game and he's celebrating. He's jumping on the pitch, artificial pitch, artificial turf. And then you know that after all that, he plays El Clásico being injured. I may understand that someone can say, okay, he has to play because it's the Messi effect. You know, if Lamine is playing, even if he's 60 or 70%, he's always Lamine Yamal. And he, if you remember El Clásico, he gives in the 89th minute of the game a tremendous assist to Jules Koundé. If it had not been Jules Koundé, if it had been Robert Lewandowski or even Ronald Araujo, we could be talking
right
now.
Koundé tried to bring it down, right? Instead of throwing his head at it.
He tried to bring it down.
Should have headed it.
Yeah. Everyone was thinking that he had to head it, but he didn't. So
strange.
It still was Lamine Yamal, a player being playing all the game walking, but in the 89th minute of the game,
still makes a play. Yeah.
Yeah. But he was playing injured, and he did all those things during the week. So.
Well, this is one we'll keep an eye on, Jordy, because, you know, you got to wonder at what point, how does Hansi Flick keep a locker room together if one guy's being treated this way and the other's this way? So we'll keep an eye on it. But listen, great stuff as always. We want to get you on our other show, Destination 2026, because the 1982 World Cup film we're going to be showing here in Houston on a thing we do called Monday Night Football. coming up. And definitely, I know 1982 meant a lot to you and your father. Yeah. So I definitely want to have you on and get your thoughts on all of that. As always, we thank you very much for coming on the show.
It will be great. See you next time. You know, whenever you want, here I am. Thank you very much, Glenn.
All right. TV3, he's Jordy Sunyer. By the way, he also does play-by-play. So he's a well-rounded guy. He always brings incredible insight. You're not going to get this kind of insight here in the U.S. From somebody that's actually on the ground over there. So that's interesting stuff to keep an eye on. And that's why it's great having Jordy on, because when he comes back, we can go back to some of these reference points and continue to talk about Barcelona and La Liga. Real quick one here before we head to break. YouTube TV customers, you could lose ESPN and the sports you love, including college football, college game day, Monday night football, NBA, college basketball, and more. So take action. Go to keepmynetworks.com to keep ESPN. Also, big shout out here, as always, to Hugh O'Connor's Pub, I-10, and the Marquee Entertainment Center out there. That is where the Liverpool Supporters Group is. And we'll remind you one more time here about the great sliders that you can get down on Bins. It's Slip Sliders. Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm. Let's take a break. We got more to come.
Warning, warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Soccer Matters.
Quick shot, score! The U.S. with Dempsey!
To Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, remate el gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Oribe!
This is Soccer Matters.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We continue on here tonight. Hey, quick reminder here. You can get the best in sliders. It's Slip Sliders down on Bins in the Museum District. Now, if you're down in that area, you're going to Herman Park, Slip Sliders is your destination. They've got every protein you could ask for. Beef, chicken, seafood, salmon. Shrimp Shack is my favorite. It is Slip Sliders down on Bins. And by the way, you go in there. These are not normal sliders. These are bigger. These are very filling. Three does good for me. But they've got all kinds of great sides as well. It's Slip Sliders on Bins, Museum District. Get down there. By the way, they're all made to order. Okay, with that, we bring in a great friend of the show. And obviously, U.S. fans will know him for many years as a player for the U.S. men's national team, but as a prime developer of talent and the coach of La Selecta El Salvador, Hugo Perez. Hugo, thanks for coming on tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Well, listen, some big news came out. We saw a post and some things about the fact that you are going to get back involved with El Salvador. Tell us a little bit about the new role. Also, we saw Mauricio Cienfuegos. So it seems like there's a big move here to kind of take El Salvador next level again.
Yeah. So basically what we're going to do here in the United States is we're going to be scouting talent that has double or sometimes triple citizenship, kids that were born here with parents from El Salvador. Okay. And what we want to do is the program is going to be focused on having two camps here, national camps, with the best players in the country, bringing them in, preparing them and evaluating them before they can go compete for a spot for a World Cup. And the ages that we're going to be basically concentrating is going to be starting with the 2009s, 2010s, 2008s, and 2007s, which is under 17s and under 20 World Cup cycles. So we're going to have the opportunity to, as you know, the under 17 cycle was moved from with FIFA from now is year to year instead of 2 years. And the under 20 stayed still for 2 years. So having those two ages, we're going to work with them and prepare them and give El Salvador the best talent that we have here in America so they can combine it with the talent that is going to be in El Salvador. And that's the main objective and focus. Because we feel that there's a lot of Salvadorians here, and you know there is. And we're going to be covering basically four zones, which is the D.C. zone, Virginia, and all those, you know, places there, Atlanta, Georgia, Houston, Texas, and then in California, which is probably L.A. and maybe a little bit of Northern California.
This is good to get this information out here in Houston because we have such a vibrant, passionate soccer community. Is this in response to not qualifying for the World Cup? Was this already in motion? And then the other thing is, you know, obviously you got to get the government to support you too if you want to change the soccer culture, right, in El Salvador.
Yeah, I think right now that the overall the program in El Salvador is not very good, okay? And it hasn't been very good, and let's be honest, for the last 45 years. So with Jamil Bukele, which is going to be the president of FESFUT, you know, he is the brother of the president of El Salvador. And with him and the backup of the government, I think they can start moving in this way and building something for the future. Okay. El Salvador has always thought about the near future, never the future. That's why, you know, with this program, especially here in the United States, I think they can start putting a good foundation. And hopefully there's enough talent here that we can probably put two national teams here, okay, from El Salvador. And then obviously combine them with the best over there so they can have a better chance of competing and trying to qualify year after year or every 2 years with under-70s and under-20s. And the other thing is we are going to try and see the availability of those players to maybe train them in the different four zones once a month, okay? And then, like I said, bring him twice a year to do a national camp for about 8-9 days, play a couple games, and then from there pick the best ones that can represent the country for the competition.
Hugo Perez joining us tonight on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 presented by the Daspit Law Firm. Yeah, look, people know the pride, the passion, the potential that El Salvador is. Now, I get the dual citizen side of it in the U.S. because we've got tons of passionate soccer-loving El Salvadorians. We got them here in Houston. It's an incredible family.
I know.
But how do you balance that with the grassroots back in El Salvador? How do you clean up the professional division? And I would think you would want that working in conjunction with everything here in the U.S. And that's a big undertaking because we all know that there's been a lot of problem at the grassroots level back in your home country.
Yeah, so what they're going to do, they hire somebody that used to work with FESFUT some years ago. He's a Colombian guy. I think this guy worked with the names of James Rodriguez from Colombia when he was young. So he'll be in charge of that same program like I am here in America. And the other thing that Bukele is going to do is he's going to fund a school, okay, for different ages in El Salvador where the kids can come and train every day, the ones that are going to be part of all this program. They're going to feed them, and they're going to give them school, okay? So they're going to be training almost every day with this program to make sure that the roots, as you say, have a good foundation because the clubs over there are not really professional clubs. They don't have any farm system. They're not developing young players. So he's going to do that here in El Salvador. If you remember 15 years ago, remember when the MLS clubs were not interested in developing players yet?
Correct.
And the Federation took the initiative of creating the academy program, right? So what he's going to do over there is something similar because the clubs cannot and don't have any foundation, don't have the money to have those programs. So he's going to take over that program for the whole country and he's going to start working with them. And then obviously we're going to combine it for the ones here.
Now, okay, so let's say we get a player, we move a guy to 16 years of age and he's excellent, 17, 18, and maybe he's ready now to play in the Salvadorian First Division. Is this going to coincide together? Will this work? No.
We're not going to be.
So you're not going to try to restructure the professional league down there?
No. Well, not me.
Right. But, I mean, do you think they have plans to do that?
Yeah, I think he has plans to do that, but our goal here is not to send players to play in El Salvador. No. Our goal here is that the focus is going to be in them representing the under-17s, the under-20s, and working with them 2 years before those cycles come up, okay? We want our players to be playing internationally, whether it's here in the MLS, USL, okay, or overseas. But my plan, and I spoke to him, is not to send players from here to El Salvador. No, we don't want that because we feel that the league is not professional right now. They don't have the means yet. Maybe in 10 years, 15 years, maybe. But right now, the focus is prepare the best players here in America to compete internationally. They can stay here with their clubs. They can stay here with the academies.
So what happened to the Alianzas of the world that I played against that had very good players? What happened to the Fosses of the world that I played against that had very good players? What happened?
What happened was that for years, we're talking about more than 20 years.
Right. This is a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got to understand the structure of football has changed all over the world. Okay. I remember in the 70s, 80s, when I was growing up over there, there were in El Salvador, there was better talent. Why? Because soccer was played every day in the schools, in the backyard, in your neighborhood, and you saw great players coming out. Then remember the war came in, it destroyed the whole thing.
Yep, the Civil War.
And after that, it never went up, and the owners of teams, because they're not clubs, teams, they didn't have the vision to be able to build up the league again, because in the 70s and 80s, El Salvador used to bring a lot of good foreign players. They used to pay good money. So the level of the league was very good. But after the war, everything was destroyed, and then you remember the Salvadorian national team from 2013, which they had a great, great generation. Remember, they sold games and they were suspended. I mean, it destroyed the whole thing. So right now, I would, if you tell me if there's a professional league in El Salvador, there isn't. It's like a semi-pro league. There's no foundation. There's no training centers for those teams. They don't have fields to train on their own. So it's a mess. It's like they have to maybe throw everything down and rebuild it again. And with the national team program, we don't have any time to concentrate with the first division because I feel that the players here that we're going to find have a better foundation. They're in better situations where they train the MLS, USL academies, ECNL academies or clubs. So it's a big advantage. So we need to make sure we take that advantage and help our players here. And the other thing is this, and I'll be honest with you. Look, kids that are born here obviously have the chance to play for the U.S. national team, okay? And I'm sure, and I know for a fact, you know, if you put between the U.S. and El Salvador, they want to play for the U.S. There's no question about that, okay? But with the program we're going to present, we're going to make sure that they understand that this is going to be done in a very professional way. Okay. If they choose not to play or the U.S. doesn't pick them and we feel they're very good players, which I think we have here, then we're going to give them the opportunity to represent that country.
Maybe a good example, Hugo, would be like an Arturo Alvarez, who is a tremendously skilled player from Houston, who I know very well. Would that be a good example?
That's the best example. That's the best example. I mean, and look at now, Roldan, who played for us.
Yeah.
He was born here. Mom is Guatemalan, dad is Salvadorian, or vice versa. He never got picked for the national team. And for me, he's one of the best backs in the MLS right now. His brother is right now with the national team of USA. So we have players like that, but we want to give them, with this new program, the Federation from El Salvador needs to build up this program and show people that this is going to be something completely different than what has happened in the last 20, 30, 40 years. And I think we can do it. Obviously, we're going to need the help of the people in charge of all these places, clubs and everything, to cooperate and give these kids a chance for us to see them, okay? Because I think every player here who doesn't make the national team for the U.S., I think they should have the opportunity to play for another country, okay? And you know how this works. Every national team program has their own coaches. They pick their own players. They pick the type of players they want. And sometimes maybe the Latinos don't fit in that, chemistry or philosophy, you can call it. And what we want is to find the best talent, and we're going to help them with our program to develop into what we want to be as the national team, and for them to compete internationally. That's what we want. That's why we feel that the advantage here in America is because they're better fed, socially they live better. Some kids are, they start traveling when they're 11 years old to different states and sometimes out of the country. And El Salvador, you don't have that. You don't have that luxury. So these kids here can help us a lot. And they can help themselves, because look, when I was in El Salvador, I had issues with the big clubs there, because I said to the clubs, listen, we want our players to get out of the country. Okay, we want our players to be playing in better leagues.
I'm sure they loved hearing that, Hugo.
No, they got upset. They got upset. And that's why, that was part of why I left.
But can't those guys be brought in? In other words, the pride, the passion. Like, I was watching a Salvadorian game the other night. There was really good attendance and passion at the game from the fans.
Yeah,
but can't you harness that in some way? Can't we convince these guys?
Look, when I was there, we started to convince them. Because the way we play, okay, we started to compete toe to toe with the U.S., with Canada, with Mexico,
right?
And then everything broke down 2 years ago. Right now, they're not doing well. They're not doing well. But the senior team, you know how it is. It has to be fed by the youth teams, not the opposite. Okay, so I think if we have a good structure for the youth national teams, little by little, we can build up. So a lot of these players that are coming up from here and some from over there, they'll have a better foundation when they start competing internationally with the senior national team. And that is the goal. But it's going to take time. It's going to take a lot of responsibility here, people cooperating, clubs, parents. But I think we can do it. I mean, I did it with the U.S., all right? We had a good problem with the U.S. when we started. I mean,
Hugo, can I just jump in? Because I want to remind my listeners, you have worked for U.S. soccer and player development with a lot of the players you're seeing on our national team currently.
The 99 group and the 98 group, those are the kids, or some of them are playing in Europe and Mexico. And that's how we started the program here. We had training centers all over the country. We had domestic and international camps. And then they were, from all those camps, you will pick the best ones to make sure that they could compete internationally to the national teams, the youth national teams. And that's what I want to do. I think I can. Mauricio Cienfuegos will be with me. He played in the MLS. He's a very good coach, talented, well-prepared. And I think we're going to try and do a good job and see if we can help these kids here.
Well, Hugo, listen, I want to thank you very much for coming on. This is a big undertaking. It's very, very interesting. I would like to follow this story with you. So if we can have you come on once in a while to update us, I think it's fascinating. I've always loved, having been to El Salvador, the passion of soccer in that country. And of course, I feel it here in Houston, Texas.
I'll tell you the truth, man. We're going to be in your area.
Okay? Good.
We're going to be in Houston the 17th and 18th.
Okay? Of November?
Of November. And we're going to be sending, in a couple of days, some flyers and information. I'll send you that information so you can help us, with your program for parents to take this kid so we can look at them. And we'll be there for 2 days, 17th and 18th, in Houston.
Okay, let's talk about getting together briefly when you're here. I know you're going to be here for work, but I thank you very much as always. It'll be great that you're coming to Houston, and thank you very much for coming on the show tonight.
Glenn, thank you. Take care, my friend.
All right, that's the legendary Hugo Perez working with Mauricio Cienfuegos. Man, this is really, really interesting stuff. And, of course, most countries use the dual nationals. Well, you heard what Hugo said in that interview. We're going to take a break here. It's Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5 presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com. 713-CALL-NOW, 713-CALL-NOW. By the way, the best in Greek American food, Nico Nico's Greek and American Cafe, three locations, I-10 in the Beltway. Then you can go up to the new location in the Woodlands. And then, of course, my favorite, the classic, the historic, the legendary original on Montrose. But souvlaki's, they're coming out with a whole bunch of new dishes, Dimitri. So get over to Nico Nico's Greek and American Cafe.
ESPN 97.5.
Listening to Soccer Matters
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. As always, powered by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW. Now, nobody wants to get in a car, boat, motorcycle accident, fender bender. You don't want that to happen. Of course not. But if you do, you need the best in the business. The best in the business is the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. They've been supporting soccer on the airwaves for so many years now, and I don't want that to be left on anybody. The Daspit Law Firm has helped get soccer talk on the air. All right, 713, call now, or DaspitLaw.com. All right, Todd Ramos, former U.S. men's national team player. He was the coach of the Houston Dynamo here in Houston. He took the under-20 national team at his time with U.S. soccer into four cycles. Interesting interview. Here is part one with former U.S. men's national team member Tab Ramos. Tab, thanks for coming on as usual.
Thank you for having me on. My pleasure to be here.
All right. So I know you don't miss the Houston weather very much.
Sometimes I do. It's starting to get to the time of the year when I do start to miss it.
Yeah, if you begin to shovel snow this December, then you'll wish you were back in Houston, right?
That's right. Yeah.
All right. Let's start off with, I want to remind my listeners, Tab Ramos has taken the U.S. under-20 national team in four cycles, has gotten them to the quarterfinals a number of times. So we're talking U.S. 20 national team, the performance under Marko Mitrovic. How about some just general observations from their overall under-20 tournament in Chile?
Yeah, I thought it was. I thought that overall it was very good. I thought the team gelled well. I thought they had a clear structure, way to play. They were comfortable on the ball for most of the tournament, and you could tell that the coach gave the players enough confidence to be able to play out of the back and to build play, which is really what you want, in particular for your younger teams.
France, Italy got results against them. You might have timed those good because I know France was a little bit disturbed coming into the tournament, how quickly had to come in. They missed a few guys, but still these are pretty historic results, right?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, and you know, when you talk about missing a few guys, you know, that's the thing about the under 20 World Cup. All the teams are missing a few guys. You know, there's no one has a complete team, including us. You know, there's always, I think in every World Cup, we're always missing one or two players that could have made us better, but it kind of puts you on the same page with everyone else.
So the dynamics of coaching the under-20 players, there's still a level there where they are, I got to use the right word here, manageable, right? Like they're not full-blown pros yet. They're still trying to make their mark. So as a coach, you do still have a lot of strength over them as far as the mission for them to move on in their careers.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think I was able to coach a unique period because my first cycle with the under 20s, I had basically all college players. And by my second cycle, I had, you know, a lot of professional players. By the third cycle, I think it was only the only college players were the two goalkeepers. And then by the fourth cycle, everyone was professional. So I saw sort of the whole development. I think the one thing that never changed is the fact that, you know, the players are young. In particular, as we were getting better, we were utilizing players that were likely 2 years younger than the age group. And I think they all have the dreams of becoming, you know, great professional players and having long professional careers. And, you know, you use that as part of the motivation. You're always talking to the players about how they should do today something that their future selves are going to thank them for. And they believe that. And they believe that because it's true. You have to lay the groundwork when you're young, and you have to work hard when you're young so that you can have that that same intensity and that same consistency when you're an adult and you become a true professional player.
Former under 20 national team coach Tab Ramos, also a full national team player, as we know through history. Did your man management skills change? Because that was incredible what you just said about the progress of the type of player that you were receiving as the coach of the under 20 national team. So did their demeanors change? Did their confidence change? Did they challenge a coach more as you climbed towards full-time pros being on the under 20 national team?
I would say at times, because obviously there are players who are playing, who are starting for professional teams by the last couple cycles, and you can, maybe you can sense a little bit of entitlement, you know, with some players as they come from their professional team and they're playing every game. But I would say very little, to be honest, because the one thing that's a common denominator for the American player I found through my four cycles coaching them was that they'll do anything for you. You know, they want the team to succeed and they're not selfish. They want to do well as a team. I think that's why, likely without changing the subject, why I had been surprised with the senior national team for the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, because I always felt like, wow, that common denominator is always the American player always goes as hard as they can and they will literally run through the wall for you.
So where does the truth lie in that? In the middle somewhere? I mean, is it on the players? Is it on the coach? Is it on both? I mean, I'm sure it's probably in the middle somewhere.
Well, that part I don't know, because it's, you know, it's obviously always easy to coach someone else's team so you can start blaming the players or the coach or whatever. But unless you're there, you don't know the challenges that each coach has, because each coach is sort of a little bit more in the personal life of the players. I think maybe it's changed a little bit with Pochettino being there, because I think he doesn't seem to be that type of coach that gets so much into the personal side of the players. But every coach is different. So I would say it's hard to judge where that deficiency lies, let's say.
Tab, from your perspective, has Mauricio Pochettino been a little bit misunderstood, or is it a cultural difference that the American fan and media maybe doesn't get when it comes to an Argentine coach? Well, how do you feel about that?
No, I feel like it's very simple. You know, we hired a coach about 14, 15 months ago now, and we expect results. This is not like soccer's not just born here, you know, and sometimes I think, you know, when we heard, you know, on some of the press conferences about how soccer is going to be so much bigger down the road and about how soccer is just growing and how we're arriving, you know, we started to hear things that we were hearing back in the 80s and 90s. You know, like soccer has been here for a long time. We need results. That's what we're about. So I don't think there's been any kind of misunderstanding. I think from a former player standpoint and from a fan standpoint, we want to see the team win, and then likely after we see the team win, we'd like to see the team play well. I mean, I think we're all on the same page. I don't think there's any misunderstanding, but, you know, frankly, until this last window, we hadn't done either.
Tab Ramos joining us, former U.S. men's national team player. Just more on Pochettino. Okay, so now we have a couple of results. It's calmed everybody down. There's been some good performances. Some players are coming back into the team. There's still some question marks in certain areas. do you really have to? And I hear this a lot from fans. Well, we need our best 11 out there. But I mean, through injury, through people not playing in certain tournaments, is that even possible coming to this World Cup? Do you think we should be seeing what looks more like what might be on the field in 2026 in the United States? Do we need to be seeing that now?
Well, I always feel like the national team is in particular from a fan standpoint, the national team, you always want to see your best players on the field. That's what the national team is for. I don't think it's for trials. I don't think it's for long-term projects. I think it's for the national team is for, at least the way I see it, the national team is for winning today. And of course you're building towards something. But that doesn't mean that you're leaving the winning aside. The winning is always important. And I think the winning should always be the common denominator. So for example, on this last camp that we had, I thought that it was the first time the U.S. team looked like a U.S. team, you know, so I thought we played the intensity that we had against Ecuador, the desire that we showed against Ecuador. And by the way, a team who did great in South America, is a legit great team, high pressures. We played every bit as fast as they played. And I thought that was really impressive from our end. And I thought it was a great game. And by the way, one that we deserved to win. We didn't get the win, but I think we all understand that. When we see the team playing that way, we all can understand and we all can be happy with a tie in that game. And then we play the second game against Australia and we didn't play well. It was a little bit boring. It was, you know, it was, yeah, we all saw the same thing, but we won. And that matters. And I think when you win, you can continue to move forward. So I thought it was an excellent camp. I look at both games. I'll take it as a yes, great job on the last camp. One great tie against Ecuador and one good win against Australia.
I like your point about Ecuador, too, because they ended up second in CONMEBOL in World Cup qualifying. So a good comment there. So in the mind of Pochettino, where do you think he is right now? Is he still in a slightly in an assessment phase? Do you think he's pretty clear on the entire roster? Are there some guys on the bubble? I mean, I think Christian Roldan played very well. Where does Malik Tillman sit? What do you think? Is he still assessing?
Yeah, I mean, that's to me, that's what it sounds like. You know, every camp is different. I think the most positive that I can see is that when we played that second game of the last window against, I think it was Japan, and we played three center backs, you know, so you can call it five in the back or three in the back, either one, right? Depending on how much you want to attack. But I think he changed into the five, and I thought that was very smart because if there's one place where we are not showing to be decisive right now, it's unfortunately right that middle of the team, right? So you have the goalkeeper, your center backs, your center mid, you kind of, and that needs to be tight. And I think by adding an extra center back, I think it assures us to be able to defend a little bit better. And what I like most is that we went into the next camp, which was this one, and he kept that. And I think I'd like to see that because although we don't know exactly who the three center backs are going to be, I think we're much better with the three, knowing that we can potentially have Dest wide on one side and Jedi wide on the other side.
Yeah, two guys that you can build the game through. And the three-back system in your mind, does that make that maybe can help some of the athletic deficiencies of a great center back in Tim Ream, who's getting towards the end of his career? Three backs may be able to maybe kind of disguise some of that a little bit.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt less, let's say, exposure, right? Because, you know, at times in particular, because we're a team whose outside backs like to attack. So, and in particular on the left side with Robinson, although Robinson and Ream have played together for a long time, I think it leaves Ream on the left side exposed a lot when Robinson attacks. And I think by having three, it limits that exposure. And I think that helps.
So I'm thinking you're saying put Tim Ream in the middle of two athletic guys on his right and left.
What I've been saying all along is that I'm not sure Ream is the guy in the World Cup. I think that remains to be determined. That's a lot of months away, and he's an older player. But if Ream ends up being the player, he could potentially do either one. With having three in the back, he could potentially be in the center or be on the left.
Yeah. And I think we forget that too, right? There's a lot of time. There's form in your league play, potential injuries. There's still a lot of time before the World Cup arrives. And I hear people saying, well, he's made the team. I mean, I'm kind of like, yeah, with an asterisk next to it, maybe.
Yeah, no doubt. But this has been going on, you know, and at the end of the day, we have to talk about something. So that's what happens. You know, I mean, we started talking about the 26 World Cup back in 2019. You know, this is the generation that's going to get us to, you know, 2026. And I'm sitting there recognizing and knowing young players and thinking half these guys won't be on the team in 2026. I don't know what we're doing. You don't build a team for 7 years. That's never going to happen. So it's the same now. I think it'll depend on the form in their club as we get closer to the World Cup.
Tab Ramos joining us here tonight, Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. To that point, there is a base of guys who have gone through a World Cup, and that's got to be very healthy for Mauricio Pochettino.
No doubt. I think the experience is tremendously helpful. You know, after missing the 2018 World Cup, we were able to go to 22, and a lot of these players participated in that World Cup. And that's going to come in handy because they know that at the World Cup, you can't really make a mistake. You make a mistake in the first round, it already takes you out of the possibility of getting a good second round game. In a best case, you're looking at playing at one of the powerhouses right off the bat. So I think that experience will be helpful.
So a player like Malik Tillman, in the absence of others, he was able to kind of jump up in the CONCACAF Gold Cup. Showed a lot of good things, maybe established himself more to people from the standpoint of trust and confidence. Would you agree with that? Granted, it was CONCACAF competition. It wasn't the Netherlands and Germany, but it seemed like that tournament in some ways was helpful to other players.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Tillman made the most of his opportunities. I thought maybe the first window in September he didn't do as well as we expected, but overall I think he put himself in position to potentially be a starter, depending on how people look at the lineup. I mean, I think he's there. He's fighting for a starting position. So he put himself, I think, in good position to be a key player for us next summer.
All right, that's part one. We'll take a break here. LamontBrands.com for your T-shirts and hats for Soccer Matters. Also, don't forget Hugh O'Connor's Pub, I-10 in the Marquee Entertainment Center. Great spot for watching the Premier League, all your sporting interests. Great whiskey offerings, great beer offerings. It is Hugh O'Connor's Pub on I-10. When we come back on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5, presented by the Daspit Law Firm, it's part two with Tab Ramos.
Dead all night. All those faces come back to me. I'll be begging to swim.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to Soccer Matters
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Quick word here for Senate Avenue Brewing, Jersey Village. It's 16,000 Dillard. Now, Senate Avenue Brewing is the best in craft beer up there. Andrew Mitchum and Company do it right. It's fresh. It's only done on premise. And it's not distributed. You got to get out there and sample it for yourself. It is award-winning craft beer from a guy who loves the game of soccer. And a guy who loves Soccer Matters, by the way. We do our shows out there once a month, every second Tuesday. It's Senate Avenue Brewing. Don't forget to get out there. By the way, they got a great patio. It's family-friendly. It reminds me of a beer garden in Germany. It's Senate Avenue Brewing, Jersey Village. It's right off of 290. Take the Senate Avenue exit. All right, here's part two with Tab Ramos. Where do you see Tim Weah? Do you see him higher up the field, or he's been used in his club play sometimes as an outside back on the right side? and a left.
Yeah, so Tim is, I think, a very dangerous player up top in the final third. And I think we have to figure out ways to get him there, right? If you saw in the last camp, Pochettino used him on the left side, wide on the left side. We've used him wide on the right side. We've used him as sort of a second striker. We've used him as kind of like an outside back. I mean, it's hard. It's hard with Tim because he's so athletic that you want to throw him in any position. But at the end of the day, I think the position where he can be most dangerous is likely, for me, wide left as a winger. And we're likely not going to play with two wingers wide. So I'm not sure where Weah would fill in at this point.
Is it a necessity to play with the inverted wingers in the modern game now to you? Based on when you lose the ball, everybody's centralized and can put immediate pressure on it.
Not necessarily. I'm a fan of having wingers with their strong foot on the outside.
I knew you were going to say that, but yeah. I had a feeling you were going to say that.
Yeah, I like the wingers that get down the line and get into the box on their strong foot. But yeah, it depends. That depends on the coach. That's only from a standpoint that I look at both the attack and the high press afterwards. I like to have players with the proper foot there, but it doesn't really matter. I think the reason I say that about Weah playing on the left side is because when we had him on the under-20s, I liked using him wide left because he made the diagonal runs inside behind the defenders. And so he usually ended up on his strong foot anyway. But he's incredibly fast and he has great timing on his runs, which is key, which is I think one of the things that Balogun has that makes him a little different as well.
And balls on the far side of the field, defenders are looking at it, and Weah is making that diagonal coming into the box from the left side of the field. Makes sense, right?
Yeah, he's very dangerous in that position. And by this, I don't mean that he couldn't do just as well in others. I just think that that's a good position for him. But he certainly benefits, I believe, from having two wingers who are wide. And we don't necessarily play that way. And I think that maybe hurts his game a little bit.
All right, Weston McKennie, how important is it for him to be a part of this team and bring that energy that we've seen when he's at his best to a U.S. national team midfield?
I think very important. I think he played a good role in this last camp, did well, I thought, in the Ecuador game, which was an extremely difficult game. And although, you know, I did see on some of the comments that people were disappointed with him to a certain extent, but I certainly was not. I thought he played a very strong game against a very, like I said, a very tough team. You know, the two teams that we played in that window were completely different. And I felt like anything you did against Ecuador really counts for me, because that's certainly it's going to be a top World Cup team. And I think he did well. And I think we need him on the field.
Yeah. And that bar continues to stay high with Paraguay and Uruguay next. So that's nice to know that you got that type of competition. So we got some competition at the striker position out of this too, which is great, right? Baller and Balogun.
Yeah, I mean, Balogun and Haji Wright in this case, right? So Haji did well. I mean, he took advantage of his opportunity. He got an opportunity and he took it. But let's not forget that Balogun also did well. I mean, he played against Ecuador, did well. I mean, he's likely, that it's debatable, but he's likely been our best player, you know, I think pretty much the whole year. And he's really worked into his position of being our number nine. I think it's great that we went from having a problem of not knowing who our nine was because they just were not good enough, to having a good problem now, in which I think we have not just those two, but I would put Pepe in the fight as well, because, you know, Pepe's just coming back from an injury. And he'll have some ups and downs over the next couple months. But I think when it's all said and done, he'll be fighting for a position as well.
Fascinating stuff. We could keep – well, I'll ask you one more before we go. We all know that goalkeeping is a place where you can win or lose a game or position yourself to win games. Would you be concerned starting a goalkeeper like Matt Friis in a World Cup who's never played in one? And really our only other option would be Matt Turner.
I would not be concerned because, you know, at the end of the day, these guys are used to playing big games. So I think he's going to be okay. I think the main concern is that we sort of don't have a clear cut number one. I mean, obviously Friis is that right now. I think he's doing a great job. He's taken advantage of his opportunities. But maybe because I come from a generation of seeing not just my generations, but the generations after also of just having great goalkeepers who constantly bailed us out. And I think we're not at that level right now.
Boy, yeah, I'm just sitting here thinking of the names. Friedel, Keller, Tony Miola was a great goalkeeper. Who did I know?
Howard.
Missed Tim Howard, yeah. I knew I missed one big one.
But then there was others that never played. Jürgen Sommer. There were tons of other goalkeepers who never got a shot who I think were great goalkeepers as well.
You had Marcus Hanneman in and around it. Yeah, you're right. That was a tough time to be an excellent goalkeeper with all those guys making the position their own, that's for sure. Well, Tab, last one before I let you go, just, you know, as we get closer and closer to the World Cup, and obviously we're hosting down here in Houston, we have crazy, insatiable fans from all over the world in this city, as you know. But, you know, some thoughts from you as we get closer and closer to it as a guy that has performed in it.
Thoughts in general, I would say say you were asking me about the favorites or, you know, I obviously Argentina, I think, is playing better likely than they were when they won the World Cup. You know, they kind of struggled through it and won the World Cup. I think now they're a better team than they were at that point. I think certainly Spain is probably the team that plays the best. But let's hold on to Spain a little bit now with, you know, Lamine Yamal and Carvajal and see if they have, you know, any internal issues with the Clásicos and in the way they do and the things they talk about. You know, let's see if Spain doesn't implode, I think they're the team to beat. But I mean, how can you bet against France also, right? Because they have amazing players in England as well. I would have the World Cup. I see it there.
I think Lamine's becoming, according to my friends in Barcelona, a bit of a problem child right now, a little bit hard to rein in right now. And you kind of see it in the way he played in the Clásico over the weekend. What about Morocco? Morocco's an incredible story. They won the Under-20 World Cup. Their senior team was the first team from Africa and an Arab country to get to a semifinal in Qatar. I did a little research on them. And, you know, this isn't by accident. This is a lot of investment, a lot of wise choices, a lot of great coaches, and it was a collaboration to really improve their standing in world football.
Well, I think, it starts with culture like everything else. You know, it's a country that loves football. They love it. You know, the fans love it. The players love it. You can tell by the passion with which they play the game. And I think that's the number one ingredient. That is the number one ingredient. There's no investment. There's no analytics that can replace the passion and the culture for the game. And I think they have that. And when you have that and then you add the other ingredients, you can really be dangerous. And I think, you know, Morocco is at that point where they have great players. They play good soccer. They're fun to watch. And you can tell they're having fun playing it, whether that's their senior team or their youth teams.
You know, what's interesting to me is they have a clear identity and it looked very similar from the under-20s to the full senior team. The identity seems really clear. It seems it's not a lot of mumbo jumbo. It seems very, very clear to both the under-20 team and the full national team as to how they play.
No question. They defend really well as a team. They're committed to their team. And then in attack, they have the freedom to do what they want. And you can tell. And that's a pleasure to see, no doubt.
Tab, tell my listeners what you've been up to. And we've told them before, but, you know, I never know with you. You might be on to something new that I don't know about. So tell us what you've been up to in the world of soccer.
Wow. Yeah, a bunch of things. So a couple of things that I can't discuss yet because they're in the works.
You know, you're like a chef who won't give us the secret ingredient.
Yeah, I think there'll be time for that. Maybe in about another month we can have another call and I can discuss more things. But at this point, you know, doing a lot of promotion for the World Cup, working closely with Bank of America, with Merrill Lynch, working on a podcast that's likely going to start next month, working on a school that potentially starts next September. So there's a lot of different things that are in the works right now that I'm really happy to be doing.
Exceptional soccer in America needs you involved in it at every level. So I thank you very much, as always, for coming on, Tab. I do say this all the time. We miss you in Houston. Well, I certainly miss you in Houston, that's for sure. And anyway, thanks for coming on the program tonight. Great stuff.
Yeah, and I'll say I miss Houston as well. I had a great time there, and I hope to be able to go back soon, and thank you for having me on.
All right, that does it tonight for Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-CALL-NOW, DaspitLaw.com. Hit me up on Twitter and Instagram, at Glenn Davis Sock, at Soccer Matters GD. You can get the podcast of this show at ESPN 97.5. You can also get it at Spotify Podcast, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Please support the show. Please challenge us. And please like us if you desire. All right, that does it tonight. For Brian McDonald producing, I'm Glenn Davis. Till tomorrow night and Destination 2026, right back here at 6 Central Time. Have a good night.